Gospel according to Matthew, the 14th chapter. Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. Well, he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, Jesus was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" But when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. One and a half verses from that Gospel lesson. When evening came, Jesus was there alone, praying on the mountain. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. Today, in our Gospel reading, we have the very familiar story of Jesus walking on the water. I bet most of you could narrate much of it without having read it. It's so frequently used in so many different settings, just like we had last week with the feeding of the 5,000 scene. And sometimes it can become so familiar that we can get lost in the details and get locked in into a particular meaning that we might have learned from a young age. And one thing about stories that are so familiar to us is that depending on our memories and how we learned them, we often think of one story like that and immediately jump to another. And I don't know about you, but for me, nearly as soon as I think about this walking on water scene, I think of the other boat and water scene that we have that comes from Matthew chapter 8, the calming of the storm. You know that story where Jesus is asleep in the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and there's this great storm, and the disciples finally call out, "Save us," and Jesus calms the waves. Many of you know that story very well as well. And we could conflate these two stories very easily in our minds because they both are, in fact, the only miracles Jesus have to do with water on a boat in the Sea of Galilee, and that's struggling, and after Jesus' work, the boat's no longer struggling. And I do think we are supposed to do some compare and contrast, that the Gospel of Matthew presents both of these things to get us thinking. But I would like to take a moment of doing that comparison to ensure we're not reading one into the other. And I think it'll be helpful for our understanding of both. In the story of the calming of the storm, there is an explicit storm. That's what we call it that. And the storm is so strong that it's swamping the boat. And the disciples shout out to the sleeping Jesus, "We are dying. Save us." In our text today, it says the wind was against them. It doesn't say anything about a storm. And it does say that the waves were great, but it also says the boat was far from land. They are making progress despite it. And there's no sense this boat is capsizing. And the second piece is in that calming of the storm scene, Jesus is asleep in the boat. And there's a lot of different aspects to that sleeping thing, but one huge difference, Jesus is in the boat. Here, in this walking on water scene, the scene only works because Jesus is not in the boat. And in fact, in the Gospel of Matthew, this is the first time Jesus has explicitly left his disciples since he originally called them when he goes up to pray. And now, most significant difference for our theme today, in the calming of the storm passage in Matthew 8, they cry out to Jesus for help. Save us. Here, they're battling the wind, and they don't cry out to anyone. They don't even think to try. After all, Jesus isn't there. So why would they call out to him? Peter does, of course, eventually cry out to Jesus, but with nearly those same words, save me, but only after Jesus has appeared and Peter tries to go walk to him on the water. There's a few other differences and a few other things going on, but I'd like to focus on that last point that I think gets illustrated by this contrast. The disciples do not call out to Jesus for help in our gospel reading today. It says that while Jesus was alone praying, by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. They're in a boat struggling and not seeking help. To think about that scenario, I'd like us to think about our own lives. When we're in places of struggle and we don't think of asking for help. So, to do that, I'd like to share a story of my experience. When I was a student in seminary living in St. Louis, my deal with my wife was when we originally moved there, my job, and I'd earn enough money that my school wouldn't cost us anything. And there was a pretty good funding with my schooling, so I was able to pull that off. I taught as much as I could, and then I took a student worker job at a Lutheran historical archive that was across the street. And we did fine, but then my last year there, Holly needed to explore a master's degree in library science and become a full-time student. So, the income I was bringing in originally was just to cover my own expenses. Now it was not going to be enough. So to solve that, I continued to teach as much as I could, but that was a relatively fixed opportunity. So I planned on simply working more hours at the historical archive as a student worker. Now, the state of Missouri's minimum wage is not what it is here in Oregon. And if I would have stopped and thought, I would have realized that my $8.75 an hour was not going to cover our family's expenses, no matter how many hours I put in. But after all, what else was I going to do? It was either make more money or go into debt. In practical terms, the real plan was probably a little bit of both. Well, about a month into that, something happened. I was working at that historical archive, and people would email us, and I was in the reference thing, and I was called a reference assistant. And I received a request from a church in Phoenix who wanted some information on the early years of their church. Their 100th anniversary was coming up. And I provided what we had, which took a little searching and so forth. And then out of the blue, someone I'd never met was emailing with me and just asked, are you a student at the seminary? I said, yes. I mean, I'm in the doctoral program, so I'm not a ministerial student formally, so I'm not sure if you're sure, but yes. And she said, well, you know, I used to give money to the seminary to support students, but I just found out that when you do that, they distribute only a portion of it to the student and the rest goes into the endowment. And I don't really like giving money to their endowment. I wanted to help students. So could I just give you $500 a month? I didn't say no. It was one of the greatest moments of grace in my life, a completely spontaneous gift from an effective stranger that was substantial enough to change my life circumstance. But if you look at that, what happened? I knew I needed to work more or take on more debt. Those were my options. The one thing I could have never fathomed was to ask someone for help. It was one of those times of grace in our lives where I would not have even imagined asking for help, but the help came anyway. And I tell that story as we look at these disciples in the boat. Unlike the calming of the seas, they don't cry out to Jesus for help. They don't even think of it. Instead, they're just struggling to get across the sea. The text says that Jesus was on the mountain praying, and by this time, the boat, battered by waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. The word, in fact, is even more poignant. Battered by waves, there's no easy way to translate it. It's actually the word for torture. The boat, tortured by the waves. They're struggling. And the one thing they don't think of doing is calling out to Jesus for help. And after all, why would they? Unlike that calming of the storm where Jesus is asleep in the boat, Jesus isn't there at all. How can they call to help if there's no one to call? And you'll recall from last week, I talk about the way miracles teach us something about our own lives. Those moments in our lives when we don't see Jesus or feel his presence, for us it might be quite frequent. For the disciples, this very well might have been the first time they had that experience. Jesus has sent them on and isn't with them. They're struggling with what to do if Jesus doesn't feel present. How can we reach out to someone who doesn't seem to be here? But I think there's even more. They're struggling, tortured by the waves, yet they are, through that struggle, barely making it. And that sometimes can be our great challenge. When we're barely making it through, that's when we never dream to ask for help. If the boat was being swamped, then they cry out, "Lord, save us." But it's not. It's a system that barely works. And if you've been involved in any kind of organization at all, you know if something barely works, it'll never be replaced. Instead, they just continue to try and muck through a bad situation, never imagining you could call out to someone for help. Just like we do in our lives, when we think Jesus isn't really with us, and when we are struggling, being tortured by waves of grief, waves of pain, waves of doubt in our own life, and we're just trying to trudge through. And then what happens in the text? Jesus shows up anyway, even though they didn't ask. That's real grace as a miracle for us. That Jesus is coming and saving us is not dependent upon our asking. Instead, as Paul says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Even though we can't even fathom asking for Jesus' help in our lives, we receive the grace from the cross of the resurrection anyway. Martin Luther always insisted so strongly that the faith we hold is a gift from God, not something we create. Luther insisted that as fallen creatures, we could never of our own volition say fully enough, "I'm convinced of who you are and I believe." Instead, Luther says, it's God who gives us that gift of faith. It's not our good works that save us, even the very ability to ask for help. Instead, it is all on God who gives us forgiveness, grace, and love, even when we can't ask. The new life we receive is present for us right now, whether or not we ask for it. That's grace in our lives. After all, it's not just that we can't fathom to ask for the kind of help we need, but we also wouldn't dare have that kind of audacity to ask. Just like me as a student worker job, I hardly was going to have the audacity to ask a stranger who was calling from Phoenix I'd never met before, oh, by the way, could you give me some money? That'd be completely inappropriate and absurd. I would never have had that audacity. But that's the audacity of grace. Even when we couldn't dream of asking, that grace is given anyway. Thanks be to God. Amen.